Hello, and welcome to the Development Debrief with Catherine Van Sickle, the stories-based podcast that interviews donors, thought leaders, and professionals in the field of fundraising.
It is FY24. What? The following track is the last episode of season 11, but this one's a little bit different. It took place with a live audience of 1,000 people in New York City in a ballroom at the Marriott Marquis. This episode was the morning keynote of AFP NYC's Fundraising Day 2023. Thank you so much, AFP New York, for giving me this opportunity to speak in front of a live audience and take questions and really feel the energy of the room. Today's guest is Wendy Seeley, Vice President for Development at the Guttmacher Institute. We talk about her career and her current role. I hope you enjoy this live format and the end of season 11. I'll be taking a break, but I'll be back before the end of the summer. In the meantime, Happy New Year, and please be in touch. I would love to do more live episodes, and so if you have ideas, reach out and we can talk about what might be possible. Enjoy!
I got to choose that song, so that was fun. Good morning. My name is Scott Wesley, and I'm proud to represent Blackbaud's strong partnership with AFP here today. I've had the opportunity and pleasure of attending AFP Fundraising Day these past few years, and we are appreciative of the incredible professional development opportunities that AFP New York City chapter provides. I'm thrilled to share this day with all of you, each of whom continues to make a positive impact in the world and inspire those around you. On behalf of the entire team at Blackbaud, I want to say thank you for your tireless work in creating a better future and your unwavering commitment to such powerful causes and organizations. Now, I'm pleased to introduce our speakers this morning for Catherine Van Sickle's podcast, The Development Debrief. Catherine is currently the Director of Parent Gifts at Yale University. Her prior experience is in major gifts at Columbia University and the Chapin School, and she launched her fundraising career at her alma mater, Trinity College. Catherine serves on the AFP of New York City Chapter's board. We also have the pleasure this morning of hearing from Wendy Seeley, the Vice President of Development at the Guttmacher Institute today. Wendy has over 20 years of nonprofit management experience and fundraising experience. Currently, she's overseeing a $35 million fundraising program at the Guttmacher Institute, a leading research and policy organization committed to advancing sexual and reproductive health and rights worldwide. Wendy also serves as treasurer of the Board of Directors for Women in Development here in New York, a membership organization for women in the development field. We at Blackbaud are so honored to support this great work of the AFP of New York City, which is there every day to support us all to be better. Now, without further ado, let's record a podcast.
May not know this, but we, everyone in this room, is part of a moment of history. This is the very first live episode of the Development Debrief. Let's hear it. So I want to start with a story. It was exactly a year ago. I was here. I was part of a panel for one of the breakouts. I remember getting ready to come here. I was so excited. Nervous about presenting for a room probably a tenth of this size with four other people. And I came out, and Thomas More, who many of you probably know, and if you don't, make sure you find him today, comes up to me with this, you know, really excited stride, and he says, "I have an idea. What if next year we did a live episode and it was the keynote?" And I was like, I mean, yeah, but do you think they're going to want to do it? Like, is that good enough for the keynote of AFP New York at the Marriott Marquis? And he just gave me a sly smile, and I think he knew he was going to make it happen. So the reason why Thomas was excited is because it's connection. It's the connection that he has to me and to the other board members here at AFP, and it's the connection that we build through the Development Debrief podcast where we can get to know each other and learn from one another. Connection is why we're here today. Connection is what brings us meaning in our lives. And I'm willing to bet that every person in here, it's a top three reason of why they've chosen the fundraising field as their career. So I want to connect with all of you. I have a few questions, and then we will get to Wendy. The first is, how many of you have heard an episode of the Development Debrief? Raise your hand. Okay, that's a good number. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to see here. How many of you know someone who has been on the Development Debrief as a guest? And raise your hands high. Okay. How many of you have been a guest on the Development Debrief? Okay, we have a few up front. My friends up front, let's see. Keep it high. I see one back here. I see one in the back. This is great. So this is, so there are people in this room that you can go back and listen to their expertise and to their stories. So whether you raise your hand or not, I invite you all right now to take out your phones and find the Development Debrief page on LinkedIn and follow on @devdebrief on Instagram, because that is where you're going to find past episodes and future episodes and connect. So I'm just going to give you all a challenge, which is to do some scheming. Take a page out of Thomas's book, do some dreaming about next year, and think about how you might connect for next year and how you're going to learn and share with others. So who knows, maybe you'll be up here on this stage next year. So Wendy, thank you so much for agreeing to do this. I know it's a big ask, and it's so funny, I was telling her, this is maybe the size or the number of downloads that we get per episode, but we never see them. You know, I'm sitting at home scrolling, seeing the downloads go up, but I can't see your faces. So how do you feel?
Well, good morning, everyone. I just want to say, first and foremost, thank you, Catherine, for convincing me to do this, and thank you to AFP New York. This is a fantastic opportunity. I'm thrilled for the conversation.
Good. Well, we're going to have some fun. So you represent the Guttmacher Institute. You're the vice president for development. You have a $35 million program. We all know that's no small feat. But just tell us a little bit more about the organization and the size of your team so that we can get some context around where you're coming from.
Thank you. So I started in September of 21 as the vice president for development. I work at the Guttmacher Institute, which is a sexual reproductive health and rights a global organization, which we do research and policy. At the time, I had one person in individual giving and four people on the grants team. And of course, we were still slowly coming out of the COVID pandemic. And over the course of the past year and a half or so, my team has completely turned around, except for that one person in individual giving. So I've had an opportunity to build my team from the ground up, which has its inherent challenges, but the beauty of it is we've been able to create a strong foundation which prepared us for some of the things I think we're going to talk about today.
Great. So it's terrific that you're able to kind of train them. You know, you have experience from ACLU and other experiences. So the moment you do become aware of a crisis or a catalyst event, a bill coming through, major change coming your way, how do you prepare and how do you lead your team to prepare? Because I know those are two different things.
Yeah, so let me just take a step back and talk about the recent crisis that we are facing at Guttmacher and across the country. Of course, many of you know, last year in June, the Supreme Court struck down over 50 years of precedent, eliminating the constitutional right to abortion. And so it was that ruling, but also in May of last year, there was many of you may know about a Supreme Court, there was a leaked opinion that sort of gave us an idea of what was gonna come. And that was in May of last year. And at that time, we started to get I started to get inquiries. We started to see an uptick in terms of our web traffic and also in terms of people reaching out to us. And so at that time, you know, what we did was we convened as a team to kind of talk about what would be important for us to think about, to inform ourselves of what was happening politically and legally, and to think about how we wanted to lean into that opportunity. I think one of the things that's important is to sort of promote an all-hands-on-deck mentality, to listen to your donors and sort of see what they need and inform what you're hearing to inform your strategies and tactics as you respond to the crisis. One of the things I want to mention that's been helpful to us, though, is that, as I mentioned, that we're in a hybrid environment, that it's sort of post-COVID, that it's a new team. And one of the things that's been really critical has been team building. And creating this sense of community, even though you know, we're only going into the office 2 days a week, we have a very strong sense of team community. And that, I think, has helped us get through the crisis as a team and to work together on our fundraising.
That's great. I'm going to push you to get a little more granular, though. Yeah. So let's go back to last year. You realize that this is coming your way. You're starting to get calls. You're starting to realize that this is serious. Where do you take, you know, do you lean on the board? How do you not get swept up in, you know, individual requests? How do you chart your action plan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for that. So I think in May, we sort of convened a room, a crisis room, to kind of think about how we were going to move forward. So we definitely worked with our board. Many of them are working in organizations that are on the ground. And as I said, we also reached out and listened to some of our close stakeholders, our donors, to get a sense of what kind of messaging would be appropriate, what type of events would be appropriate, what information they needed, and those are some of the things that we did.
And in the case for you, where you don't have a set constituency base, which is most common, I think, in healthcare and education, but I know there are lots of people here who don't have a set constituency base. How are you finding new donors in those cases?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think what's interesting about the Guttmacher Institute is we're one of the most cited research organizations. And so when I say that we had a lot of web traffic, we had a lot of media inquiries. I think our media inquiries have quadrupled, particularly around that leak and sort of just throughout last year and even now, they're still very high. And I think a lot of donors are coming to us from that. We're also leaning into our board and asking them to make introductions, arming them with messaging, providing them with messaging so that they can go out and work with us. We've also made some key hires. I should sort of finish the story that I started, that, you know, I had a smaller team. Now we have 10. I have a 10-person team. And so sort of investing in that capacity and sort of thinking about, you know, what the needs are. We've really built out the individual giving team, which was something we had planned to do before. But, you know, fortunately, you know, we've been able to use those resources, human resources.
And as you look at that team of 10, it's a great size. Mm-hmm. How do you balance the opportunities? Are your individual giving officers organized regionally? You know, I'm sure it's tempting to want to talk to every donor and be part of everything, but you can't do that when you think about deploying your resources. What's your thought there?
Yeah, that's a great question. We haven't been able to specialize as much in terms of deploying, you know, our offices regionally. We are still growing the program and sort of, you know, we screened the data, prior to this, we screened the database and have a good sense of where our top prospects are. So that's where we're leaning in terms of outreach and, you know, calls and other programming.
Do you work with portfolios?
Yes, we do have a portfolio program. You know, when I started, most of, and still to this day, most of Guttmacher's revenue comes from foundations. So I was actually hired to help establish and build out the individual giving program coming from the ACLU, which is a fundraising machine in many ways. So I brought a lot of what I learned there to Guttmacher And so, yes, we are working on sort of refining our individual giving systems, working on our database, and our portfolio program and reporting.
So there's a sign in my office, and it says, there are no emergencies in fundraising. And I think in the education sphere, that may be right. But in your sphere, it's a little bit different. How do you train your staff? How do you yourself decide what's an emergency, what can wait, and, you know, what does responsive look like? You know, are your people always on email? Like, what are the boundaries? I guess that's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. So I agree in terms of the emergency. I sort of see them as opportunities. And sort of taking a step back, though, one of the things that's important to me personally is that my organization and my team sort of stayed true to our values. I think it's important to have a clear sense of what you stand for and how you want to be represented in the world. So in this case, in terms of the field of sexual health and reproductive rights, my organization is a big player in terms of research. The way that we responded to the decision was we organized a webinar where we had, you know, very high attendance, thousands of people, and we wanted to sort of provide people with information, which is what we do. We also wanted to uplift some of our community partners, which is something that we are committed to doing. So we featured a representative for Fund Texas Choice, as well as Access Reproductive Justice. These are abortion funds that are committed to getting money in the hands of people who need services. So we were committed to, that was one of our values, to uplift, to be a leader, to be a convener, and to recognize where we are in the ecosystem, you know, in terms of how we could be most helpful.
So when I think about these kinds of situations that you're talking about, I was actually, this morning I was thinking about the Ice Bucket Challenge and what a phenomenon yes. that was. And I was thinking, I wonder who was in the development office at that time when this was happening. And I think, you know, how were they able to respond? How were they able to process the gifts fast enough in time? And, you know, you and I were talking about what, you know, how does a good fundraiser respond in a 24-hour span? Like, let's just role play it out. A donor calls and says, I want to give a big gift, but I need XYZ. What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to trying to have all your ducks in a row, just as a good sort of bread and butter development program, having some of these things in place, and then really leaning into the all hands on deck mentality. You know, we mentioned that I came from the ACLU, and I was at the ACLU when, after the 2016 election, where I think the organization saw a 3 to 4% increase, increase in its membership. So there was an influx, a huge influx in donations and membership, and fortunately there, we had a lot of things in place. But we also had to really lean into our team members and say, hey, this is a very unique situation. We have an opportunity, you know, roll up your sleeves. And people were working quite hard, you know, longer hours on weekends to try to be responsive. The other thing is, if you have the opportunity to bring in consultants and to bring in help, you know, knowing that there's a surge and that it's not necessarily going to last forever, that interest. So the question is, how do you think about sustainability? How do you think about, you know, what's a reasonable number of members that you're going to keep over time, or donors that you're going to keep over time, knowing that other things may come up? And so you really have to, you know, balance that out.
If you were to name those three or four things, knowing that the people in our audience are working in all different sectors, what are the three things that would branch those that people could take home and be sure that they have in place?
Yeah, I mean, like, so I think it's important to have sort of the bread and butter, a good development plan, a good way of acknowledging donor interest, I mean, I have a development plan for the year, and from that, I can sort of iterate. It's flexible. You know, I try to teach my staff to be flexible in terms of their thinking, to be creative, to be bold in terms of ideas, to not be afraid. I think it's important to think about, you have your plan, you have goals, you have a sense of how you're going to get there, and then thinking, how can I, or how should I be responsive when you have an opportunity, when you have a crisis. And so, those are some of the things that we think about.
That's great. So you mentioned the ACLU and the 3X influx, and you were there at that time,
yes.
Right? So what did you learn there that you've applied at Guttmacher, and how did it prepare you for this role?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as I said earlier, I learned how to sort of convene my staff, how to create this room where we could, I don't want to say a war room, but a crisis room where we would sort of think through what's important, and to be, think about how to inform yourself, how to be responsive in the moment. You know, at that time, I remember getting so many inquiries, like I said, where we, you know, we brought in temps, we made short-term hires in order to respond to the influx of information and inquiries.
And did you have volunteers, board members in that room, or was it just staff?
We had board members to help us inform our strategy. And of course, we used them to talk to donors in their network because they were getting inquiries as well. So I think it was important for us to get our messaging together, to keep it simple, and to make sure that everybody who needed it had it on hand. Because there were so many conversations happening, it was hard for, you know, the hired just staff to be responsive.
And what is the board's role at Guttmacher? Do they do active solicitation and fundraising, or are they more in an advisory role? How do you use them?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the things that we've been leaning into is the AAA model.
What is that?
So the AAA model is... you know, it's a model of fundraising where board members can be advocates, askers, or ambassadors for the organization. And it's a way of sort of meeting board members where they are and helping them to kind of specialize and think about what comes easily for them.
Say the three again.
Advocate. So you might be in a room advocating for the organization, advocating with prospects, stakeholders, but not necessarily making the ask. Askers, obviously, are people who are doing solicitations. And ambassadors are people who, might be at a cocktail party talking about the organization, or at a coffee shop, at a gym, whatever. You know, hey, I'm on the board, this is what this organization does, but may not feel comfortable making the ask, and, you know, warming people up so that somebody else can come in, either a staff member or another board member can come in and actually make the solicitation.
And if you could guess, what's the breakdown between the three? I'm fascinated by this. I mean, I guess it's similar to time, talent, and treasure, but I love the AAA.
Yeah.
It feels very covert.
What's the breakdown on my board?
Yeah.
I mean, I think...
You can reveal it.
Yes. I mean, it's a work in progress. We're just sort of leaning into this and embracing this, really, as I said, trying to build out our individual giving program. And so I think most people are most comfortable in the ambassador advocate role. And then I have a few who are very, very enthusiastic about being askers. And I think it's good because they're very complementary, and they can work together. And, you know, I have one board member who's like, we're going to get everybody to be an asker. And I'm not sure, if that's realistic. But, I'm willing to try. Yeah.
I think that's great. What else? So the convening, the bringing people together, the communication with board members. What else? Do you have any stories from your time at the ACLU that are really memorable?
I'm trying to think. I mean, one thing that comes to mind is just, I remember I had a staff member, you know, there was an organization that was having an event about women's rights, and I had a staff member who, you know, volunteered to go. It was on a weekend, and she volunteered to go. She had a table where she had some leaflets, And it was a woman's club or, you know, gathering. And she had so many inquiries that she couldn't keep up with the amount of people that were coming over and saying, I want to help, I want to volunteer, I want to donate money, I want to have a house party, you know. And so she wound up calling about two or three other people from the team to come that day to help deal with the influx of enthusiasm for what the organization was doing. And so it really struck me, you know, you talked about connection and you talked about community, and that's one of the beautiful things about fundraising is that, yes, it's about money, but it's also about community and connection. And we know that there's a relationship between engagement, connection, and you know, dollars raised, so.
To that point, though, I think you really do have to have an established goodwill, sense of goodwill on your team to be able to even make that call to say, can you drop what you're doing and come help us? And that's something that is built over time.
Yes.
That's why you were talking about, you know, the development of your new staff and helping them to understand that. Do you think that in the world of Guttmacher and ACLU that people are generally, well, I'm going to answer my own question, that people are probably very passionate about the topic, right? Mm-hmm. So there is that extra layer.
People are very passionate about it, and people have very personal connections sometimes. They really connect with the mission. But I also think from a management perspective, it's important for us to, one of the things that I also think is key in terms of thinking about a crisis, particularly when you're asking people to lean in, is to talk about self-care and to talk about work-life balance, because it's important to think about this question of burnout, you know, particularly, as I said, we were coming out of a pandemic, you know, and everybody in the whole world was touched by that, moved by that in some way. So how do you allow people the space to recharge and to come together and sort of, you know, share in when they're dealing with issues that are very personal to them? I think it's important to set boundaries, but to also allow for some of that. And I think, you know, that relates also to what I was saying about innovation and creativity, is you're building that trust where people can take risks. And in my case, in my experience, it does push my development program forward.
So it's June 16th, right? How many people here, raise your hand if you're feeling burned out? We have 2 weeks, okay? It's a good, okay, be honest. It's a good third of people. Yeah. You know, everyone's trying to make their goal. So do you have some examples of ways that you are letting people, is it that you're taking the call yourself, or is it that you're saying, oh, hey, you really went overtime these last few weeks, I want someone else to do it? How do you manage that as the leader of the team?
Yeah, I mean, so we meet regularly, and we always start with a team builder, which a lot of people roll their eyes about, but we really use these as opportunities to get to know people in a silly way, and so that we inject some levity and some connection with our meetings. So that's a team meeting, and then in our one-on-one meetings, we do a lot of prioritization, and the way that I've... the way that I like to manage is that we can each have a second, right? So if I really can't get to something, my director, I feel confident because I work so closely with her that she can take it over the transom. So I like to think about functional areas where you have a second, if you really need to. I mean, people have their responsibilities, but sometimes I think we recognize sometimes you need a little bit of help. And so I like to make sure that we, you know, we feel confident where we can share. And so we do have communications if we notice that somebody's feeling particularly overwhelmed. So that, I think
and
that
to feel
helps.
Comfortable saying that.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people don't feel comfortable. So that says a lot about you and your leadership style.
Right.
And of course, the hybrid environment has put, in some ways, a wrench in all of this of figuring out who's available when, and especially when you need things printed, prepared, for the in-person. How has it been helpful in terms of being nimble and responsive, but also maybe hurtful as you're, you know, working?
Yeah, I think that's a good question and something that I'm constantly thinking about. You know, of course, we all started sheltering in March of 2020, and some of us, you know, never went back or took years to go back, and we had to pivot in terms of how we do our work. You know, what's helpful about that is this question of work-life balance. You know, there are people that are doing laundry. You know,
we all do it.
You know, running out to the gym and other things that really just weren't possible before. And I think people are grateful to have a little bit of space and a little bit of grace. I think the challenge is, of course, you know, missing out sometimes on that water cooler conversation. That's really key. That's that one idea that's going to unlock a whole new strategy or...
And with having a new team, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like I said, so I think we really lean into the opportunities to build that team, to build team, and to talk about things other than work so that we can build that trust. But I do think that the hybrid... The other thing that we do is we have an anchor day where everyone's expected to come in on Thursdays. And often the team has lunch together, you know, when we can. So there are those moments. They may not be as frequent as when we were working, everybody was working in the office 5 days a week. But in some ways, they hold more significance because we know we're not going to see each other again. So I think there can be something special about that.
It's so much more significant than we realize. And I myself am also in that 2 days a week in person. And I always find it's strange. So we go in on Wednesday and Thursdays. And when we leave on Thursday, I'm still getting used to saying, you know, I'm not going to see you for almost a week. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to miss you. You know, I'll see you on Zoom, but that's a long time to go when you're building relationships and building teams. So do you have any plans this summer to do, like, an in-person staff retreat or goal setting?
Yeah, we're going to do a one-day retreat in August. You know, we're working on some planning, some innovative projects, and so we'll retreat in August to talk about all these things. You know, I wanted to mention when I was at the ACLU in the height of COVID, you know, it was hard. There are many people on my team actually who lived alone, and so they felt very isolated. And what we did was we created a 15-minute check-in a week where we would not talk about work. You know, we wound up talking a lot about Taylor Swift, if you can believe that. You know, I went with it, right?
The universal equalizer.
But, it was a fantastic opportunity for people to just connect. And I found, you know, there is a connect. Obviously, studies have shown there's a connection between, you know, that sort of team mentality and sort of productivity. And that really helped us get through it. So I'm very...
Retention.
Sorry?
And retention, too.
Yes, I'm very committed to... creating those opportunities now, either on the in-person days or on Zoom.
When you think about goal setting in an environment where it is up and down and tumultuous, and there can be a huge gift one year and not the next, and it's sort of hard to, do you find that it's hard to predict the numbers that you're going to be bringing in, and how do you set the sights for your team when it's just so unknown?
So I try to focus a lot on sustainability. So I sort of factor in the fact that we're in, you know, I have factored in the fact that we were in, for lack of a better word, a crisis situation. Yeah. And recognizing that we may not hit, you know, I'm very clear with the board and my president, you know, that this we may not see this same level again. And then we really have to track it. I mean, the beautiful thing about hiring new staff and getting them excited to talk to donors is that, you know, we try to get a sense. We have a program, you know, we got an influx of donors, so we have a program where we are reaching out to them specifically as new donors and trying to get more information, trying to see if this is going to be a long-term donor. We have like a little survey, we have a welcome card, we do calls just to see what kind of response we get and if this was sort of a one-time gift or, you know, that they're very interested and galvanized and that they're going to be, you know, a repeat donor.
And it makes sense that donors find you online because they're probably thinking, how can I help? They find your website. Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of where your donors are? I'm sure there's a huge group in New York, but
where they're based?
Yeah.
You know, we have global programming, but yes, most of them are in the United States, and there's a large number in New York, California, And I think Chicago as well. But we have donors from all over the country for sure.
So what can we take from some of these conversations out into our offices as we're planning for next year? What do you think are the most important things that you rely on as a team leader to rise all tides?
Yeah, I mean, so first and foremost, I think it's important to have a clear sense of your organization's values or your team values. You can always come back to those, and they can encompass how you relate as a team, as well as how you want to show up with your donors and other stakeholders. I also think it's important to foster a sense of creativity and innovation in the team so that people are comfortable sharing new ideas. And then to have your team sort of stay informed on the issues. So we do article shares, and we have, we make sure that we sort of have conversations about, you know, current events, current issues, and how that might impact our work. And, we do a lot of development planning and sort of calibration in terms of our strategies. We track our numbers, we track our output. And then we say, well, this didn't quite work. Let's try this, or let's, you know, we try to pivot. So I think those are important tools in all cases in terms of fundraising.
I'm going to open up the room. Again, in the spirit of connection, we're all here. Are there any questions for Wendy? You know, I'm trying to have this conversation be open so that people can, you know, apply it to their own organizations. But if people have questions, I see one right here. Please stand.
Yeah, that's a great question. And the question for everyone in the room is, how do you approach onboarding? And I think it's a perennial question and something that I struggle with. But first and foremost, we make sure, and this is obvious, but that the person has all the materials, all the grant proposals, everything that they need, you know, just to kind of get settled. And then we do an extensive walkthrough of all of those materials. And we do have a buddy system so that somebody on the team will be there to answer any questions, large or small, you know, where is the bathroom, or what is this particular grant proposal about, and what was the impact. We have them meet all of one-on-one, all of the leadership in the organization, so that they can ask questions as they're getting up to speed. But onboarding is something that I don't want to say I'm obsessed with, but I've seen it. I've actually done it very well and done it poorly. So I know that it's really important in terms of setting up people for success.
I see a question here in the white.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And I'll say flippantly, it's a question I have myself. I'm not sure if I've hit it.
That's how you know it's a good question.
But I do think and talk a lot about creating a culture of philanthropy. You know, in terms of what does it mean for everybody in the organization to participate in this culture of philanthropy. Everybody understands you have to pay the light bill, you have to pay staff. But in terms of understanding their role in that, that's a little bit harder. And so, what's been exciting for me is that I have a board that, for example, has embraced the AAA model. And what I've said to them is, this is how we're going to establish a culture of philanthropy throughout the organization. You're going to help to model this. And my president and I are aligned in that we have to, you know, establish this culture, which, you know, is not there or not where I think it should be. But I use every opportunity I can shamelessly to promote this and try to make the connections in terms of why is this important in terms of fundraising and what does it mean. I think, you know, it certainly in my organization, there are people who, you know, there's this sense that money is a little, not dirty, but uncomfortable, or that's something that you do. I don't want to do it. And so, you know, what I try to tell them is that we're all in this together, and I can only be as good as, you know, the support that I'm getting from my program team. Because when I walk in a door, a donor, you know, they kind of look at me and they know what I'm going to say, but they really want to talk to you. You're a researcher, you're a leader in your field, or you know, you're an expert on this particular policy, and that's what's going to get them excited. So I think promoting that culture, but also thinking about small wins and how to make people feel good, because there is this sort of contagion effect. And so sometimes you have to get really crafty and think about, you know, how can I make this person feel good about going on this donor visit, or, you know, answering this particular question, that type of thing.
Totally agree. We have time for one more, and you are so enthusiastic. So please. Do you want to repeat the question?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the question is, you know, obviously we know that relationship building is very important. What is one of your winning relationship building strategies? And I really appreciate this question. You know, there's so many things that come to mind, but I'll tell you what I think about when I go into a donor meeting. And I think about, how can I connect with this person on a human level, and how can I make that person feel comfortable? Because I think whenever you're talking about money, you know, often people start to get, you know, you start to see the tense, what is she going to say, what is she going to ask me? And so I try to bring the temperature down. I try to think about, you know, how can I have a heart connection with this person, you know? You know, I work with a bunch of researchers, and they keep a lot of, it's a very heady organization. So I try to, going back to this question of culture philanthropy where I am, but also to your question, I try to think about, how can I have a heart connection? What matters to you? And how can I relate to that? How can I meet you where you are, and sort of take you somewhere where I'm, you know, making the case, where I am, you know, sharing my messaging with you, but also being responsive to what you're thinking, what your needs are, what your fears are, what your anxieties are, and sort of pivoting in the moment.
And I want to piggyback off of that to say, sometimes it can be just as simple as asking someone about their kids or something in their life. It just takes them back a second, and people really appreciate it, whether they tell you or not. I would love to close with my signature question, Wendy, which is, what do you know for sure?
Yes, thank you. You know, it's a great question. And I think in this moment, what I know for sure is that connection and community are really what's going to take us forward. And for all of us here as fundraisers, it's just amazing to be here together to connect and to think about these issues and how we can sort of move forward. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, listeners, it's Keith from Evertrue. Evertrue is the end-to-end solution for insight, outreach, and analytics for higher ed advancement and stewardship teams around the world. Recently, we launched Evertrue Studios, advancement's very first media hub, where subscribers have access to over 100 hours of free, on-demand original series and podcasts, all created with fundraisers in mind. We're thrilled to feature the Development Debrief on Evertrue Studios Podcast Network. Check us out at evertrue.com/studios.